You're listening to the Hippie Haven Podcast. I'm Callie, and it's my life mission to empower you with the knowledge and tools you need to spark positive change in your community. If you're new here, I'm the owner of Bestowed Essentials and Hippie Haven. I started Bestowed Essentials just over 3 years ago, and today our handmade, eco-friendly personal care and cleaning products can be found on the shelves of over 200 stores across the U.S. and Canada. Bestowed Essentials is one of the 15 winners of the Stacey's Rise Project Class of 2020, and we are also recognized by FedEx as one of their top 100 small businesses in the U.S. for 2 years in a row. In December 2019, my team and I opened Hippie Haven, a zero-waste store and community space in Rapid City, South Dakota. Of course, I also host this Hippie Haven podcast, and we release new episodes every Wednesday, which you can get instantly downloaded to your phone for easy listening by subscribing to the Hippie Haven podcast on any of the major podcasting apps. You can find the show notes and transcript for every episode on hippiehavenpodcast.com. You can also learn more about me on our website. You can follow along on Instagram at hippiehavenshop or subscribe to our YouTube channel to see more behind the scenes at both of our Earth Conscious companies. Today's episode is brought to you by The Futon Shop. The Futon Shop is a California family-owned company. They've been handcrafting natural and organic futon mattresses, bed mattresses, pillows, and sleep covers since 1976. All of their handcrafted organic futons and mattresses are made with 100% certified GOLS, GOTS, and USDA certified fibers, and they come with a 30-night comfort guarantee. Visit hippiehavenpodcast.com/thefutonshop to find your new mattress today. Today's guest is Ron Kamen, CEO of Earthkind Energy Consulting and host of the Awesome Earthkind podcast. Ron's life mission is to empower everyday people to make clean energy transitions to reduce their carbon footprint and save them money. For more than three decades, Ron has energized communities, governments, nonprofits, and businesses to increase their energy efficiency and switch to renewable energy. Ron's now building an online community of awesome Earthkind people ready to go clean and save green. Today I've asked Ron to explain our current electricity system and the renewable energy alternatives as if we're fifth graders. And then he's also sharing tips on how you can reduce your carbon footprint and save money today. So let's get started. Tell me a little about yourself and what exactly it is that you do for a living.
Yeah. So first, it's a pleasure to be on your show, Callie. And I'm a kind of an old hippie at heart, really. But for a bunch of years in my career, after I came out of college in my hippie-ish days, I've been working on clean energy. And that's been my passion, my mission in life, I realized soon after school. And, you know, when you take a look at the environment and you take a look at the climate stuff, almost 90% of the greenhouse gases come from energy. And when I came out of school and I was thinking about what I wanted to do, I wound up deciding to be a community organizer. And I worked with people who were on fixed incomes at first, who literally were shutting down parts of their home because they couldn't afford to heat and eat at the same time. And I worked with them to fight utility rate increases, which were going through the ceiling at the time. We built up a community group from a few people around the dining room table to hundreds of people to thousands of people. And I ran a region and then became part of a state and national network of folks that were pushing to have utilities become much more environmentally focused and much more consumer oriented. And we got some things put into place that helped with that. And I realized that energy and energy in the environment are really why I'm here for this incarnation of my life. And so for the past bunch of years, that's what I do. I work with people who want to figure out how to have an impact that benefits the environment. And simultaneously, by doing it, they're able to save money, which is great. So it's a win-win situation. It helps the earth, it helps them, and puts money in their pockets.
Tell me more about the company that you run today.
So I have my consulting company is called Earthkind Energy Consulting. And I've worked for a lot of years, for 20 years actually now, with all different kinds of institutions, businesses, nonprofits, schools, municipalities, government entities, and all different kinds of commercial entities to figure out ways to help them be more environmentally responsible to reduce their carbon footprints, but simultaneously to save them money. And they've done everything from solar electric projects to energy efficiency projects and lighting projects to heating and air conditioning, because heating and air conditioning is a big chunk of our greenhouse gases and costs, and then also electric vehicles and transportation. So on the commercial side, I've worked with different people who wanted to figure out how they can save money, reduce their costs, and then have a positive impact on the environment. And there's lots of ways of doing that. And when you take a look at energy is electricity, and it's heating and cooling, and it's also transportation. And when you take a look, and it's about a third, a third, a third of those, each one contributes to greenhouse gases. And it's almost 90% of all the greenhouse gases come from the energy that we use. About a couple, 3 months ago, after dealing with COVID and everything that was going on, and a bunch of my commercial work kind of stopped for a while as people were just focusing in on survival, I had a coach who suggested that perhaps I'd bring my message out to the broader audience through the podcast. So I started a podcast, and the podcast is Awesome Earthkind. And the concept behind awesome is that the first four letters of awesome are AWES, which actually can stand for the air, water, earth, and sun, the four elements, the forces of nature, which awe us every day, and we just see the amazing power of the forces of nature. And then the last two letters of awesome are M and E. And you and me, and all of the 7 billion of us on this planet, are now another force of nature. We are really the fifth element, and our combined impact on the planet is becoming clearer and clearer with climate change. And the amazing thing about it is that on the one hand, it's really scary the amount of impact that we're having and how we're changing the climate and really disrupting our very life support systems. But simultaneously, the good news is that as intelligent creatures that we are, we've now created technologies that can tap into these amazing forces of nature, which have 1,000 times more energy than we need. We can tap into these forces of nature and channel and use them for our electricity, for our heating and cooling, and for our transportation. And the best news is that the prices have come down so dramatically now, the technology's improved and everything's gotten so much better, that in almost every instance, we could save money when we're doing it too. So it's a win-win-win situation. And the even better part is that when you take a look, and not only can we have a positive environmental impact, we can save money doing it, but we can also create more jobs and make it a more prosperous economy, have better environmental impacts and health impacts, especially in economic justice areas and economic and environmental justice areas. And so it's really the solution to a lot of our problems that we're facing here in this country and across the planet. So I've been really excited about it. Awesome Earthkind, it aims to empower everyday people with the ability to figure out what they can do next, to have an impact, to take their next step wherever they are on the spectrum, because all of us are on the spectrum, right? Some people have done some things, some people have done a lot of things, and all of us can do a little bit more. And wherever we are on that clean energy spectrum, our goal at Earthkind Energy and Awesome Earthkind is to help people figure out what can they do that's their next step that would have a positive impact, that would reduce their cost, reduce their carbon footprint, and simultaneously create a legacy that they can be proud of and pass along to our kids and grandkids.
I would love to start this segment about clean energy by first talking about, I guess, the opposite of, clean energy, dirty energy. And if you can explain it to me like I'm a fifth grader, tell me about fossil fuels. We hear this term thrown around constantly in the news. Tell me about the system as it is now in very simple layman's terms.
Sure. So fossils are literally that. They're basically aged creatures that died years ago, and whether they were plants or animals, they got buried and fossilized, right? And so that's oil and gas. And as it decomposes, it's buried in the earth, and we've been digging it up, whether it's oil or gas or coal, is compressed carbon. So those fossil fuels are very concentrated forms of energy, and it's really, when you take a look at the cycle, it's really solar energy that went into living creatures who then died hundreds and thousands, millions of years ago. And those fossils, now we dig them up and we burn. And by burning it, we release the energy that's in them. So we burn coal, we burn oil, we burn natural gas. And when we burn, it releases the energy, which we use to power civilization. It produces electricity in our power plants. It produces heating in our homes. And it produces gasoline and diesel fuel to transport us and jet fuel. So it transports us. So those fossil fuels are what we currently run our civilization on. It's what we've been running our civilization on for 150 years or so. And the good part about that is we've built up modern civilization. It's let us create the energy that lets us talk now on the internet, that does all the lighting in our homes and workplaces, that heats and cools our homes and our where for work and school, and it also gets us around in our vehicles. But the bad part about that is as we burn and release these substances, it's never 100% efficient, so there's always byproducts. There's byproducts that go into the air, which is why if you're in back of a car or a bus, you have those fumes, and those fumes are really nasty and not good for your health. In addition, it creates greenhouse gases, and those greenhouse gases build up in the environment, and that's why we're experiencing now this amazing transformation of extreme weather events, where in the West we're seeing fires, in the East and elsewhere there's floods, there's hurricanes and tornadoes, and all these increasingly extreme weather events are from us burning all these fossil fuels and some other things that release carbon and greenhouse gases, but 90% of it is from fossil fuel burning. That impact on the air and then on the whole climate and environment is threatening our lives. Does that answer
So
your
what
question?
it sure does, yeah. Now for the opposite side of it, what is clean energy and how is it different than what we're using now?
Sure. Well, clean energy, the interesting thing is that it's kind of using the energy that's here in a sustainable way without burning off the fossils or the pieces of the planet that have this intense energy in them. And in particular, if we were to do everything sustainably, we would let these forces of nature, the air, the water, the earth, and the sun power everything. And we've gotten to that point where we actually can. So when the sun shines, that little ball in the sky, that ball in the sky has 1,000 times more energy than we need. It looks so small, but it's huge. It's amazing. It produces an incredible amount of power. And without that ball in the sky, without that sun power, we would all be frozen. This would be a hard, just solid, frozen piece of rock. But that sun has given us energy that has created everything that we see all around us. And living off the sun on its power every day is kind of a sustainable cycle because then you don't have to take the kind of what's in the bank in the earth and burn it, right? So one piece is to grab the power of the sun, and there's various ways of doing that. I'll talk about that in a second. The power of the air is we felt the power of the wind, and wind power is another piece of sustainable energy. So when the sun shines, you can get energy. When the wind blows, you can get energy. When the water flows is another way of getting energy, and there's various forms of hydropower or water power. And then buried in the earth a few feet down, it's a constant temperature because of billions of years of that solar energy getting put into the earth. And so, using that energy in the earth, we can use that for heating and cooling too, because it's a pretty constant 50, 55 degrees once you get down about 4 feet. So, on the renewable energy side, various ways of using the sun. Part of it is to just design things right and build things right. And I should step back for a second and say that part of this is energy efficiency. Energy efficiency means that you have thought and using things more efficiently. So in our homes, one of the ways to use things more efficiently is to make sure that our homes aren't leaking heating or cooling so that actually everything's weather tight. So not only do we not want the weather to come in, we don't want the heat or the cooling to go out. So to seal up leaks and things like that, and to be more efficient in terms of our homes and our workplaces and our schools. So energy efficiency is a key thing. That's one aspect of efficiency. So first, to be efficient and be mindful when we're building new structures, how they're oriented and how tight they are, and how the orienting it properly to the sun can reduce your heating and cooling costs, and also give you the maximum amount of minimal amount of energy impact that you need to do all the things that you want to do. That's one piece is efficiency and design. the use of solar energy. Most everybody has heard of solar energy now, and solar energy is growing amazing. It's just incredible worldwide, the growth in solar energy. It's now become the cheapest source of energy on the planet. So when you take a look at all the competitive sources of energy and you take a look at where solar is now, it's actually solar has gotten to the point where it's amazingly less expensive. And it's now the majority of new energy electricity sources that are going up across the world. And in the last year, it's really been the majority and almost all of the only new sources of energy in the United States. So solar electricity is what happens when the sun is then captured in a photovoltaic cell. And people can look up what a photovoltaic cell is, but basically it turns sunlight into electricity. There's no moving parts, it's all solid state technology. So you take a solar panel, you put it on your roof, or you put it on your ground, or you put it on your camper, or you put it wherever you want to put it. Sun hits it, it creates electricity, and then you have electricity, which is great. Wind power is similar, except that when the wind blows, you turn something. And by turning something, you create electricity. Same with water power. They have water powers. Many people are familiar with hydroelectric dams. So those dams, when the water flows, creates electricity when the water flows over the dam. And then geothermal power, there's two types of geothermal power. One is what they use in some places in the country, in Hawaii and pieces of California, where you go down and you tap into the molten earth that's down there, the lava basically, and you use that hot, very hot heat to then create steam and spin a generator and create electricity. But really, the main form of geothermal or heating with the earth, heating and cooling with the earth, is where you just drill down under a building or into a parking lot. You go down 4 feet and 4 feet or so, depending upon where you are in the country, in the world. And by going down, that constant temperature that's down a few feet. Four feet or 5 feet or so, it's usually about 50 degrees. And so, if you have 50 degrees and you just put a fluid down there, you bring the fluid back, now that fluid is 50 degrees. And if you're trying to cool a building, you're cooling with a 50 degrees cool fluid. And if you're trying to heat a building, instead of whatever you were trying to heat up from minus whatever degrees it is outside, now you've got 50 degrees. So you can only go a little bit higher or a little bit higher with certain technologies. And the technologies that are out there to do that are called heat pumps. So what's a heat pump? A heat pump is what we all have, even though we don't know it. Anybody that's got a refrigerator or a freezer actually has a heat pump. So a heat pump technology just takes heat, it compresses and expands a fluid, and it takes heat out of a space or it puts heat into a space. If you have an air conditioner, it's taking heat out of your house and dumping it outside. And a heat pump, an air source heat pump, reverses that in the winter so that instead of taking heat out of your house and putting it outside as you would with an air conditioner during the summer, a heat pump during the winter flips a switch and takes heat out of the air, even down to minus 15, there's still heat in the air, compresses and expands these fluids, takes the heat out of the air, and puts it into your house or your workplace. That's an air source heat pump. When you take an air source heat pump and you combine it with the power of the ground source, or the geothermal energy, which is at 50 degrees, now you only have to heat or cool a little bit beyond 50 degrees, and you have a very, very efficient form of heating and cooling. So when you take a look at some of the most fascinating things going on, when they call net zero houses, net zero homes, or net zero buildings, and there's a lot of them, more every day, take the power of the sun, they put solar electric panels on the roof or in a carport, over the parking lots, or in the ground nearby. A lot of farmers now have solar electric panels and they're farming around the solar electric panels. Bunch of different ways of doing this. But you take the solar, if you have wind, you can use wind resources. Those are in certain areas though. But solar, and you take that solar energy and you combine it with heat pumps, ground source and air source heat pumps. And then you can also use that same electricity now to do electric vehicles. So with solar heat pumps for your heating and cooling and electric vehicles, you can basically knock out 90% of your carbon and greenhouse gas emissions. And again, if you put them all together, save some money while you're doing it.
You touched briefly on pollution and how that's related to dirty energy. And so we've talked a little bit about those health issues, but can you explain more about how clean energy is, in fact, connected to both social justice and to health issues overall?
Sure. So when you take a look at communities of color and low-income communities, what you find is that they've generally been located near highways and byways where there's a lot of transportation. And transportation, again, is about 30% or so of the greenhouse gases, and it's the source of a major amount of air pollution, as we know from any place that has a lot of vehicles. So when you have all those vehicles and you're located in a low-income community that's near a lot of transportation, highways and such, what happens is that you have a buildup of particulates in the air, has a dramatic impact on people's health living in those areas, and it's basically pollution that goes into low and moderate income communities, and many of them are people of color. In addition, what you also have is an older building stock, and a lot of older buildings are also places where folks of color are. What you have then is older buildings that have old heating systems, in particular old oil systems, or even old natural gas systems. And as they burn a fossil fuel, what happens is that the older systems in particular are nowhere near as efficient at burning as newer systems. And so you get a lot of emissions there too. And those emissions build up and they become part of the air pollution that people then have affecting their health, affecting in particular their respiratory health. So if you look in certain communities across the country, what you find is that the asthma rates in certain low and moderate income communities are up to 20-25% for kids in those communities, which is just unbelievable. I have a daughter who had asthma, and it's just horrible to see people struggling to breathe. And when you know that the reason why they're struggling to breathe is because they just happen to be living in a bad part of the world where there's a lot of air pollution, primarily because of transportation or their heating systems, you say, gosh, you know, there's something that we could really do about this. And what we can do about it is by moving the clean energy systematically, we can improve the quality of air, which is great. We can improve the quality of life because we can create jobs with these technologies and have an impact and help those people who most need it with the work that most needs to be done. And one of the great things that we've discovered is that when you start to move the clean energy technologies, there are now over 3.4 million Americans that are working in clean energy technologies and clean energy. That's 3.5 times more than all the people that work in fossil fuels. It's more than all the school teachers. It's more than all the waiters and waitresses. And because it's so dispersed, though, people don't realize that there's so many people in clean energy. There's everyone from solar and the wind folks that are doing all that. But then it's also the heating and the air conditioning people that are putting in these new heating and air conditioning systems. It's the electric vehicles that are now we're seeing massive growth in. So, to give you a sense on electric vehicles, the world, it took a long time to get to the first million of electric vehicles. From 1 million to 2 million, it took 18 months. From 2 million to 3 million, it took 8 months. And now we're at over 7 million electric vehicles in the world, and it's growing exponentially. And the reason for it is because the prices keep coming down and there's less moving parts. So it's a solid state technology. And just like the smartphones that we all have now have more computer power in them than the total amount of computer power in the world a few years ago, it's more than the computer power that took the Apollo rockets to the moon and back. That amount of computer power is in our hand for a few hundred dollars. And that amount of energy, similar types of things are happening with energy, where little by little, energy is becoming much cheaper, and much more distributed. And with electric vehicles, we're seeing this dramatic growth where there's going to be the ability, because there's only tw about 20 moving parts in an electric vehicle compared to 2,000 moving parts in a gas vehicle. So, because there's much fewer moving parts, because there's no explosions going on under the hood, because there's no oil changes or transmission fluids, what you're seeing is that the price, as the technologies keep evolving, the price of electric vehicles are coming down. Where right now, today, you can get one of over 50 different electric vehicles, one from almost every major manufacturer in the world. It's not just Tesla anymore. It's every manufacturer has an electric car, and they're all going to be having more of them. Those prices now are getting cost competitive with gas vehicles. And if you take advantage of the tax benefits and sometimes the local utility or state benefits, you can actually get an electric car cheaper than a gas car. And it costs you half the price in fuel because per mile it's much cheaper than gasoline. And it doesn't have oil, so no oil changes. Doesn't have transmission fluid, so no transmission fluid changes, so much less maintenance. And it's not spewing out massive amounts of particulates and pollution and greenhouse gases. So a number of things come together. What you see is that there's the opportunity to create jobs, which has social, environmental, and economic impacts on everybody. It's the ability to clean up the environment, in particular dense urban areas that have a large concentration of low-income people and folks of color. And then it's also the ability to have a really dramatic impact on cost, which affects everybody. So we can reduce the cost, we can create a prosperous economy, we can create and deal with some social justice issues, we can deal with environmental issues and climate change. And it's just one of the, from my perspective, a great solution to a lot of our problems.
It does seem like when we're talking about clean energy, you get naysayers who bring up these like three big common complaints that seem to be misconceptions, in fact. And you know, what we hear a lot with wind energy is like, oh, well, windmills are so ugly. And with solar energy, people are complaining about, oh, well, we'd have to like, you know, kick everybody out of Texas to create a field of solar panels big enough to actually power the entire country. And then we also hear the misconceptions of, oh, well, you know, if there's no sun, you have no electricity with solar, and if it's not windy, you have no electricity. So can you clear up those big common complaints around clean energy?
Absolutely. So
You sounded
that's
so
right.
excited.
I am so excited. I'm so excited. So first, if you took an area about 100 square miles and you put it out in the bottle, let's say, or not too far from your Dakotas there, that amount of solar electricity could power the whole country. The challenge is getting that electricity from that central source, wherever it is, out to everybody, and then that becomes transmission wires and then distribution wires. So that's the biggest challenge, really, is making sure that the energy is distributed. The great part about solar is that there's sun everywhere, not all the time, but there is sun everywhere on the planet. So what happens is that by the fact that solar is so distributed, just like that iPhone or smartphone that all of us have now has the amazing computer power that used to be in one massive building that would had cost tens of millions of dollars. Now what's happening is that solar electricity can be distributed. So everyone can have a little bit of energy being produced right where they are. So that distribution is really key, and you can have enough energy. There's enough energy around us that electricity supply everybody's needs. Second thing you mentioned was the aesthetics of it. And definitely, look, I mean, that's a challenge for some people. I understand that. I happen to like Picasso. Somebody else might like Rembrandt. I get it. Personally, I would love to have a piece of multi-million-dollar kinetic art producing my clean energy, pollution-free in my backyard. I would love to have that. I have a little windmill that spins around. I love looking at it. I'd love to have one where there's in a place that actually has sustained energy that can produce electricity and do it cheaper than other forms. And the nice thing about all these renewable energies is, again, you build the infrastructure. And what happens is last century, we built hydroelectric plants. And the reason we built them was because when the water flows, once you build a plant, when the water flows, you get free electricity. And that's it with all the renewables. That's it with solar as well and with wind. So when you build the infrastructure, wherever you build it, wherever you decide you're going to have it, when the water flows, you get free energy. When the sun shines, you get free energy. When the wind blows, you get free energy. And then you have to maintain those systems, but maintaining those are relatively cheaper than constantly digging up new sources of fossil fuels, transporting them, burning them, and then doing whatever you're going to do with them. So aesthetically, personally, again, I'd rather look at a windmill than I would at a coal plant, an oil plant, a gas plant. And even though you don't see them, what you do see all around us are all the wires. And people have become used to seeing the wires, but if you drive around and just walk around, you'll see wires going everywhere. There's telephone wires, there's electric wires everywhere, right? So that's what gets the energy to us generally, are those wires that mostly are in the air. Some places they're buried, but those wires are there. We've gotten kind of used to them. I think part of it is that some people just aren't used to these technologies, and that's part of it too, is to anybody getting used to change, right? But look, I mean, you know, if you take a look and do you like the look of a devastated community after a tornado or a hurricane has come through? Because that's the alternative, is that what we're going to get is more hurricanes, more tornadoes, more storms, more fires, and that is definitely not an aesthetic nice thing. So again, you know, I get the fact that some people have different views of what they like and don't like, and okay, and let's have that conversation and let's talk about where we should put these windmills, if that's the big issue, and where we should put solar. But really, everybody should have solar. Wherever we've got a roof, wherever we've got space, we should put solar because it's distributed energy. And then it becomes much closer to where we're using that energy. Everyone can have it close to them. And in terms of, let's see, the third part was, that you needed so much, and I take up the whole state of California, of Texas. That's not true. It's really much less than that. So people can look, do a Google, figure out how much energy we use in the whole country and the whole world. And what you find is that it's less than 2% of all the land area in any particular location that would supply all the energy that we need for our electricity, our heating, and our transportation.
You also, you mentioned earlier that solar energy is now the most affordable energy in the world, but unfortunately there's still a pretty significant financial barrier to individuals, homeowners who are interested in adding solar energy to their home. So how can we overcome those financial barriers? What type of resources are in place, or what kind of change needs to be made to remove these barriers in the future?
Yeah, great. Thank you. It's a wonderful question. Fantastic question. So a couple of things. One is that the prices are coming down really dramatically. And while it's still somewhat expensive for any individual to do 100% of their energy with solar, all of us can do a little bit, right? So for instance, there's those little solar powered cells that power calculators, or that are now there to power backpacks, or to do little pieces of our energy needs. So first, there's some simple, easy, relatively affordable ways of starting to do solar that makes a lot of sense. When you take a look at the larger systems that do massive amounts of energy, and that's where solar is now the cheapest, what happens, I know the third part that I missed before, is that when the sun doesn't shine and the wind isn't blowing, what do you do for electricity? And what you're seeing is the cost of batteries have now come down so dramatically that you can have solar on demand, wind on demand by putting it together with battery packs. And solar is the cheapest form of concentrated energy now. When you put up a big solar plant, all the different utilities are finding that when they put up big solar plants with battery storage, and or wind energy with battery storage, now you can have the energy when you need it, and it's actually the cheapest. When you look at any particular homeowner or business or school or whoever else, there's always a process that they need to go through. One thing to think about, and that we work people through with the awesome EarthKind energy system, which is a systematic way that we've put together after decades of working with various different people, is the first thing you take a look at is how much are you currently spending on electricity, how much are you spending on heat, how much are you spending on transportation. Take a look at those three dollar numbers, and that's your energy budget. And it also winds up being most of your carbon budget, most of what you're producing in carbon and greenhouse gases. So the first thing is take a look at those three sources of energy, those three costs, and identify some simple, easy things that you can do to reduce those costs with efficiency measures. So for instance, with electricity, with LED lighting. LED light bulbs are now around. They're pretty common. Most people have heard of them. They don't know exactly what they are. But if you have a regular incandescent light bulb and you go to take it out after it's been on for a while, you burn your hand. And the reason why it's so hot is because most of the energy in that incandescent light bulb is creating heat instead of light. An LED, or a light emitting diode, is a much more efficient form of lighting, and it gives you the same amount of light, but it does so more efficiently and without creating heat. So instead of 100 watts creating a light bulb for a 100 watt light bulb, you only need 20 watts to create the same amount of light. So you get an 80 to 90% efficiency. So the first thing is you figure out efficiency measures that you can do with lighting, figure out efficiency things that you can do with heating and cooling, and the same with transportation. You do those efficiency measures. Second thing we look at is, okay, so what is your most expensive form of energy? What do you want to accomplish? Do you have to replace something anyway that you're going to be doing some point in the near future? So if you're building a new structure right now, it's really a no-brainer. When you take a look at these technologies and you systematically approach how to make the buildings tighter, more efficient, orient them to the sun, deal with shading, put in solar, put in geothermal, put in electric vehicle charging station and reduce your fuel costs. What happens is that when you add all those things together, you can build a building now that's very close to the same cost as you would have paid for a fossil fuel building that was inefficient, but now it's so efficient and it saves you so much money that you can get a great return on your investment and it's much more affordable. So anybody that's doing new construction right now, there's really, it's almost a no-brainer to take a look at these technologies and how you integrate them into building, because really you can do it for just about the same price and that makes it much more affordable. But then when you're taking a look at how do we do stuff individually, the great news is this, is that not only have the prices come down, but in addition, a lot of financing mechanisms are there. And there's been a number of government policies that have helped make things much more affordable. So for solar, people have heard about the solar federal tax credit, which is around, but it's been decreasing now. So one of the policies that we need to have changed as we look forward to this next 4 years of where things are going to come from on the federal government is to make sure that we have those types of incentives and investments in clean energy that allow people to take advantage of those and keep those costs down. There are ways of doing the financing now. So if you don't have the cash to invest in things like solar energy or a new heating system, there's ways that you can structure it so that you can put it into a mortgage if you're refinancing or have home equity. And that's one of the second best ways of doing things is to take home equity and put it into a mortgage or a home equity loan. The next wave is to put it into a type of loan, whether it's a regular loan or a lease. And there on solar electric, in most parts of the country now, you can do something where you pay for the energy as you're using it or as it's being generated. It's a power purchase agreement. And what happens with a power purchase agreement is somebody comes along and they put solar on your roof or they put solar in your yard and you don't pay anything. They just put it in there and then you pay them as the energy is being produced. And by doing that, you're usually getting savings compared to your utility. You have to sign a longer term contract so that they can make sure that they get their money back from their investment. But they're taking advantage of the federal tax credit, some states, the state tax credits. Some utilities have utility programs that give grants for these types of technologies. And by looking at it systematically, almost everybody can figure out a way that they can structure a clean energy package that reduces their electricity, heating, cooling, and transportation costs, and they can finance it in such a way that it reduces their dollar outlay. So again, take a look at your electricity, current electricity expenses, heating expenses, transportation expenses, put it all together, identify what your goals are, take it step by step, look at efficiency, look at a step-by-step approach for how you can install some of these technologies, finance them in such a way that you save money, and at the same time, you can have a big impact. And by doing it that way, then you don't have to worry so much about the upfront cost.
You mentioned switching over to LED lights. What other tips do you have for people or things that they can do today, potentially, around their home to reduce their energy and electricity heating costs or usage, I should say, just a little bit?
Sure. So one of the things is to listen to the awesome EarthKind podcast, because we give those tips and those energy opportunities there. And we share what other people are doing all around the country and around the world with these technologies. And also what we do is we run a clean energy demonstration where people get the opportunity to come and in about 90 minutes. They hear ways that at least three simple things that they can do that would have a significant impact. And then they find out about a system and how to tap into a system that can systematically take them ahead. But a few other ways of doing things. So one is LED lighting, and lighting is a big cost in people's homes. Second thing is to take a look at your hot water heater. How hot do you have that hot water heater set? Is it set so that it's so hot that you have to have a mixing valve that brings in cold water? In which case, if you have it set too hot, you can usually set it down a couple of degrees. And that hot water heater, which could be 15 to 20% of your bill, then becomes much less. So take a look at your hot water heater and what the temperature setting is, and can you reduce the setting? Third thing is a lot of people have forced hot air or air conditioning, air and blown air coming into their space. If you have those types of moving air systems, they all have filters. And many people don't even realize that they have filters and they don't change them as often as they should. Well, we don't change those filters for either forced hot air or air conditioning filters. What happens is that particulates build up, bacteria builds up, all sorts of nasty things build up. It creates a barrier, which means that the air, the the system has to work harder to move that air. That makes the system work harder. It costs more energy. And in addition, it's really a health impact as well, because the stuff that's building up in those filters is not very healthy. So change your filters regularly. Identify where you have those filters and change those filters regularly. If you want to have a simple, easy thing that's no cost, go to bed at night, turn the temperature one way or the other. If it's hot during the summer, let it get a little bit hotter before your air conditioning goes, you know. So if you turn your, instead of having your temperature set wherever it is, let it go up a little bit at night. If you're heating, let it go down a little bit so that you don't have to have it quite as warm as you do when you're in your space. Just adjusting your thermostat. Easy, low-cost thing is to get a programmable thermostat or a smart thermostat that you can even activate and control from the internet or from your smartphone. So those are some simple, easy things that everybody can do in their homes. LED lighting, turn off the lights, obviously, if you're not in a particular space. Let the light from outside actually do most of your lighting if you can. That's the daylight orientation that in design we should absolutely do. Thermostat up or down, hot water heater, change the temperature so it's a little bit lower. And those are some simple, easy tips right off the top.
Yeah, we've got a smart thermostat at my retail store. It's the first time I've ever had one, and I love it. We've got it scheduled so it kicks on about 10 minutes before we open the store, and then it starts turning itself off about 15 minutes before we close for the day, and just let the temperature kind of go back to closer to state to what it is outside. But of course, we have it programmed to not let it get too extreme on either hot or cold.
Right.
But it is, it's fantastic, and it automatically turns off on Sundays when we're closed. It's not on at all. And yeah, definitely advocate for a smart thermostat. You also, so you mentioned the green energy demonstrations that you do. Tell me more about that.
Yeah, so what we do is we once a month or so, we'll run a clean energy demonstration. If people come to our website, they can sign up for those demonstrations and choose when they would want to participate. And what we do is we systematically go through electricity, heating, and transportation. We talk about the technologies that are there, the opportunities that are there, what they can do, and also give them the opportunity that if they want to go dive into what their situation is, because everybody again is a little bit different. You live in the Dakotas, I live in New York, folks in all different parts of the country have different utility structures, different state incentives, different tax benefits they can take advantage of. There's different programs. We all have different costs. So you have to really take a look for yourself. And that's the first thing that we advocate is that people take a look at their own, again, electricity, heating, and transportation costs. Look at those costs, and we help people then walk through what those costs are, what their goals are. If they want to get to a zero cost, zero environmental impact by having clean energy systems, there's ways of doing that systematically, and we help them look step by step in a process to be able to get to that point where they can know these are the things that they want to do, these are the costs that would have them get there, these are the incentives that they can get to reduce those costs from the state, from the utility, from the tax structure. These are financing mechanisms they can take advantage of, and depending upon where you are, there's some really good financing options that that are very affordable. There's sometimes low interest loans you can take advantage of. So there's a lot of different ways of doing this, and everybody kind of needs to customize it from where they are, what they've already done, what their first step should be. So again, the first step is almost always do some energy efficiency things to reduce the amount of energy that you need, because the cheapest energy is the energy that we don't use. So it's systematically go through efficiency and then identify what those other costs are and start to chip away at those costs in a way that will systematically reduce those costs and have a positive environmental impact.
Now, the last thing I want to ask you about, Ron, is I hear that you have experienced a tornado, correct?
Oh, yeah. Yes, indeed.
Tell me about that experience and talk to me just a little bit more about how, our dirty energy is affecting climate change and how climate change is, of course, affecting the extreme weather like the tornado that you experienced.
Yeah, so as we build up more and more carbon dioxide into the environment, we're disrupting what was a finely balanced system, right? And the Earth systems have been here, and we now have more carbon dioxide in the environment than we've had for millions and millions of years. So when you take a look at that, what happens is that it really disrupts how the energy gets moved around the planet, in particular the air, but also in the oceans, and the ocean's impact on the air and the forest and those impacts there, and the melting ice cap, because as the ice caps melt, what happens is we don't bounce as much energy back up into space because the ice caps now are melting, so it's being absorbed and getting into the oceans. And it's just what's happening is we're getting much more disruptive energy, extreme weather events. And yeah, a bunch of years ago, I was on this lake with my family. I have three kids, and we were there and we were having a great day. It was a beautiful day out on the lake. I was doing some sailing with my father-in-law's boat and having a great time. And it was kind of a funny day because I was sitting there and it was really, really mellow. There was no wind and I was just kind of taking a nap. And then all of a sudden the wind would pick up and I'd be like, whoa, and I'd just be like holding on and be just shaking. And the sail and the lines were kind of vibrating. And it was like, whoa. It was really an incredible experience. And then boom, it would stop. And it was like that all day long, and I didn't really think about it. It was sunny, it was cloudy, it was sunny, it was cloudy. And now I know that when there's that type of changing, intense weather where the sun is out and then the clouds and the wind come in, and it's just going back and forth, that's a sign that you're in the middle or right near an extreme weather event. And what happened was, as I went home, my two boys drove ahead of us. One was in college, and they went about a half an hour ahead of us. And then my daughter and her mom and I went after that. As we're going down this highway, I look over to the side and there was a wall of clouds. I had never seen anything from the ground straight up, just this wall of clouds across the whole horizon. And then I saw people pulling over, and then all of a sudden we listened to the radio and we heard that there was a tornado around. I didn't see the tornado, but by the time we got to my house, I had to go up a hill by my house. And they wouldn't let us go up the hill because the tornado had come through and wiped out these very high tension power lines, and the power lines were down across the road. And for a period of a number of hours, it was raining and it was hailing and it was storming, and I didn't know where my two boys were, and we couldn't get a hold of them, they couldn't get a hold of us, and it was a really traumatic, incredible experience. Thankfully, eventually we went, tried to get around. We came back. A couple hours later, we were able to get there. The boys had gone around the other way. They were okay. The house was relatively okay. I had a couple of people staying with us. They were okay. The pets were okay. But the tornado had come down and wiped out 21 50-foot tall pine trees, snapped them in half. They were twisted, knocked out a barn that I had, a small shed that I used to have horses in. Thankfully, the horses weren't there anymore, because they would have been gone. But it was incredible. It was just really, really amazing. Did $50,000 down damage to the house, wiped out all these trees, knocked out 7 acres of wood in the backyard. And the funniest thing was that it was so concentrated that I had one of these crystal gazing balls. You know, it's kind of like a Christmas tree ball that you have in your front yard. It's a very fragile thing. It knocked it down, but it didn't break it. So it did all this damage to the trees, to the woods, to the house, but then this little ball that was there just got knocked down. It was perfectly fine. So that was my tornado experience. I realized at that point first, when you have these sunny, cloudy days, keep an eye, because probably there's disruptive weather happening, and there's more and more. And the science has been very clear for a number of years that as we continue to build up the greenhouse gases in our environment, we're going to see more frequent storms, more frequent wind events, more frequent rain and drought events, and then they're also going to be more intense as well. So what we see here in the Northeast is a lot more rain events and a lot more water. What we're seeing out in the West and elsewhere around the world is much greater periods of drought and therefore fires, uncontrollable fires. And then there's all the storms that almost everyone has experienced with hurricanes and tornadoes. And so that's what we're looking at. And we have to change it. And the way to change it, 90% of the change is from clean energy.
That is such an incredible story, and I'm so glad everybody in your family was safe. Was that in New York?
Yep, it was in New York. And the funniest part is that, you know, I've been aware of climate change for a while, but that was my experience with it. And then ever since, I got really sensitized to keeping an eye on the extreme weather events. And people just, you know, it's funny what we get used to, right? And you know, I'll go back to the wind thing. You know, people don't want to look at wind turbines, but once they're there, they kind of become part of the scenery, you know, just like we got used to the scenery of the electric wires around us. And it's kind of like that with climate change to an extent too, because every year now in New York, there are hurricanes, excuse me, there are tornadoes, microbursts, they call them in some places. I have pictures of the Statue of Liberty with a tornado in back of it. I mean, wait, this is not Kansas. This is not, you know, the Midwest where you're used to tornadoes. This was New York City with a tornado not far from it. And every year now, there is some type of extreme weather events happening here in New York. And it's happening all across the globe. And one of the things we have is we call them weather time fudge or fun stories. So we ask people to tell us their stories about an extreme weather event that they lived through and what it was like. And we have a lot of the guests on our show sharing some really funny stories and some really not so funny and scary stories. But every one of us pretty much has an extreme weather event now, and we should realize that these are not just random acts. What's happening is that as we continue to dump more carbon and greenhouse gases into the environment, we're seeing more and more of these, and it is scary. And everyone has a right to be scared. And what I'm hoping is that that energy that we have that we're scared about, we'll transform that into personal, community, and collective change across the whole planet. So that we will use this fear, which we have a right to be fearful about what we're doing, and use it to help us individually in our homes and families and in our communities collectively, and then as a state and as a country and as a world, make this transition because we have to do it. We have to do it for ourselves and we have to do it for all future generations.
That last quote is just a perfect place to end it. Ron, where can we go to learn more about your work, to listen to your podcast, and to follow along on your journey?
Thank you so much, Callie. It's Awesome Earthkind, AWESOME, Earthkind. So, woman and mankind, but Earthkind. AwesomeEarthkind.com or Awesome Earthkind Podcast. It's on all the major podcasts, Apple, Google, Spotify, etc. So listen to us, subscribe, rate, and rank us. And if you come to AwesomeEarthkind.com/, do you want it to be Hippie Haven or do you want it to be Cali or how you want the landing page to be?
Let's do slash Hippie Haven.
Slash Hippie Haven. For whoever's listening to this and wants to find out more, there'll actually be some special tips on the page that you can download that will give you some things that you can do, simple, easy things to do. There'll be the opportunity to be in a small sweepstake to win an LED lighting fixture worth about $150 or so that changes out some of your one of your fixtures so that it becomes much more efficient and much less energy consuming and save you some money. So come to awesomeearthkind.com/hippiehaven/hippiehaven, and we'll have some things for you there.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Ron.
Thank you so much, Callie. It was really a pleasure. Thanks. Thanks so much for the great questions and keep up the great work. You're doing awesome stuff.
And that's a wrap. Now it's time to take action. If you haven't already, change out your old light bulbs for LED bulbs, look into getting a smart thermostat, and make sure you're doing the small things like turning off lights when they're not in use. For further impact, look into powering your home with renewable energy sources such as solar energy. You can sign up for Ron's next free clean energy demonstration by heading over to awesomeearthkind.com/masterclass to learn more about saving money with no or low-cost efficiency measures. The link is in the show notes below. I'll be back next week with local Democratic candidate for South Dakota State Representative District 32, which is my district, to talk about her platform and the upcoming 2020 election overall. Remember, knowledge is power, so if you learned something from today's episode, share it with someone you know who'd also benefit from this free resource. If you share the podcast on social media, don't forget to tag and follow us at Hippie Haven Shop. Or my personal Instagram is at hippie.ceo. This podcast is produced with the help of my communications coordinator, Ray Lynn, who also helps produce our Hippie Haven YouTube channel. Subscribe to us on YouTube to see more behind the scenes at our zero waste company. You can also support our environmental advocacy work here at Hippie Haven by leaving a review for this podcast in whichever app you're using to listen, or buy us a virtual cup of coffee to keep us going. Visit buymeacoffee.com/hippiehaven to support our work. Thank you so much for spending this time with me, and I hope you have a great rest of your day.